Okay, swear, we're going to look at this section, verses 33 through 37, swear not at all. How many have heard me speak on this already? Okay. Because you came to Seminole?
I've never heard a full lesson. I've heard some of it. I've read your book.
My book. Which one? I want to read that one. Really? You have some notes of mine on that? Okay. Well, okay. Bear with me while I go through this again then in front of you. Let me ask these questions to introduce my thoughts. Number one, what's the major difference between swearing and vowing? What's the major differences? Okay, number two, was it sinful to swear under the Old Testament law? Number three, what is adjuration? Adjuration. Number four, did God or Jesus ever swear? Number five, what's the meaning of the Greek word heteros? Heteros. Number six, when is swearing wrong? Number seven, what is mental reservation? Number eight, what religious organization does not believe truth has to be told to people not entitled to the truth? All right, let's begin by reading the scripture that we're going to study. Jacob, Matthew 5, 33 through 37, please.
You've heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord. But I say to you, do not swear at all, neither by heaven, for it is God's throne, nor by earth, for it is his footstool, nor by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Nor shall you swear by your head, because you cannot make one hair white or black. But let your yes be yes, and your no, no. For whatever more than these is from the evil one.
Okay, when Jesus addressed the subject of swearing, he was discussing a very ancient practice. The very first biblical reference to swearing seems to be Genesis chapter 14, verse 22 and 23. Read that for us, Josiah.
22 and
23? Mm-hmm.
And Abraham said to the king of Sodom, I have lifted up my hand unto the Lord, the Most High God, the possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take from a thread even to a shoelatchet, and that I will not take anything that is thine, lest thou shouldest say, I have made Abram rich.
Okay, so notice in verse 22, Abram says, I have raised my hand to the Lord God Most High. And he seems to be taking an oath, and this raising of the hand seems to be basically pointing to God up in heaven. And so our practice today in the courts of law, at least it used to be, I don't know if they still do this or not, but they would bring a Bible and you put your right hand on the Bible. No, you put your left hand on the Bible and you raise your right hand. And that custom is basically saying, I am appealing to the God of the Bible that what I am about to say in my testimony is the truth. And so he knows if I'm speaking, and he will take vengeance on me if I'm not speaking the truth. That's the idea of raising your hand with your hand on the Bible. So as you can see, Genesis chapter 14, swearing's been around for a long time. And Moses' law regulated swearing, and to those regulations we're going to look as we study what Jesus said about all of this. In verse 33, Matthew 5, 33, verse 33, Nathan.
Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord.
Okay, now we've been saying that all along in Matthew chapter 5, when Jesus said, you've heard that it was said, he's explaining what the Old Testament actually taught. And then when he says, but I say to you, this is New Testament regulations. Okay, so when in verse 33 then, you've heard that it was said, you shall not swear falsely, but you shall perform your oaths to the Lord. He's saying that's what the Old Testament actually taught. And that is true. That's exactly what the Old Testament did teach. Let's look at this in Leviticus 19, verse 12. Nehemiah.
And you shall not swear by my name falsely, nor shall you profane the name of your God. I am the Lord.
Okay, there it is. So Matthew 5:33 is a very accurate representation of what Moses' law actually taught. You shall not swear falsely in the name of the Lord, and you shall perform your oaths to the Lord. If you don't, you're profaning the name of the Lord. Because you're using his name, you're saying, I swear in the name of God. And then if you tell a lie, you are treating his name as if it were just common and ordinary, and you're profaning his name, and you're taking God's name in vain. That's how you take God's name in vain, is to swear and then tell a lie. Okay? Here, an entire chapter was devoted to the subject of vowing and swearing. Anybody know what that chapter is? The whole chapter. Okay, Numbers chapter 30. Let's go over there. Numbers chapter 30, verse number 2. And I'm going to ask Cody with his old King James Version to read this because I like actually the way it's translated better.
Man vow a vow unto the Lord, or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word, he shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth.
Okay, here a man vows, a man vows to a vow, and he swears to what? Vows a vow and he swears an oath. So I want you to notice that these two are all lumped together in the same chapter. So what regulates vowing to vows also regulates swearing to oaths. And you'll notice that these are verbs right here, vowing. In the English, the word vow can be either a verb or a noun. And it just you have to look at the context to see how it's being used. So you vow to a vow, that's a verb. And here's the verb swearing to the oath. The oath is the noun. So you swear to an oath. Now the word swear... I should have had these written on the board beforehand so you could see it with your eyes, but I don't have that. So I'll just read it to you. To swear, to make a solemn declaration or promise, to assert under oath, to affirm earnestly with great conviction. Okay. To affirm. Did you hear that word? Affirm. To affirm earnestly with great conviction. Some people say, oh, I don't swear, I just affirm. Well, the word swear means to affirm greatly with great conviction. And so we're kind of trying to split a hair when we say, oh, I don't swear, but I will affirm to tell the truth. Now, the word oath, you swear to an oath. The word oath means a formal promise to fulfill a pledge, often calling upon God as a witness. This is coming from American Heritage Dictionary, by the way. So the oath is a formal promise to fulfill a pledge, often calling upon God as witness. Okay, when the word vow is used as a verb, it means to promise or pledge solemnly. To promise or pledge solemnly. And then when it's used as a noun, it means an earnest promise or pledge that binds one to a specific act. An earnest promise or pledge that binds one to a certain act. Now, if you wrote those down, or if you listened real carefully, you can see there's just not a whole lot of difference between vowing and swearing. There's not a lot of difference between vows and oaths. But there are a few technical differences between the two. I'll share them with you. This may not always hold true. You may find a loophole somewhere or some flaw in what I'm about to say. But generally speaking, this seems to be the difference between vows and oaths. And so let me make two columns here. You vow to a vow and you swear to an oath. What's the difference between the two of these? Okay, the first basic difference is when you vow, you are vowing to God. And when you swear, you are swearing to men. Generally speaking, that's what's going on first. It's the same basic action, only you're doing it to two different sets of folks. So you make a vow to God, you swear to men. Okay, the next difference seems to be vows tend to be voluntary. And you decide on your own you're going to take a vow. On the other hand, oaths are basically obligatory. And when you walk into the courtroom, you are obligated to, they're going to make you put your hand on that Bible and raise your right hand, and if you don't, you're in contempt of court and you're going to jail. So there's generally speaking, vows are voluntary, oaths are obligatory. Number three, vows tend to be private, whereas oaths tend to be public. Now, that's not always the case, because when people take wedding vows, those aren't private, those are public. Everybody listens to those vows, and everybody should listen to those vows. But many times, men make mostly private vows, but oaths are done in public because it has, generally speaking, to do with the affairs that the whole community is interested in. All right. Number four, vows seem to be positive, whereas oaths tend to be negative. So when you vow a vow, you are asking God to give you a blessing. Give me a blessing. Like if you remember Jacob, we'll read his story in a minute, but he made a vow to God and he says, if you will be with me in the way that I go and give me food to eat and clothes to wear until I come back to my father's house, you shall be my God. So he's asking God to give him food and clothes and watch over him. However, swearing tends to be negative. And what it's saying is calling for, may God strike me dead if I'm not telling the truth. You remember Peter began to swear, I do not know him. When he was swearing, he wasn't using four-letter curse words, or he wasn't cussing. What he was doing is he was saying, may God strike me dead if I know that man. And boy, when you think about that, wow, what was Peter saying? That was terrible. Now, number five, vows tend to be promissory. And oaths tend to be affirmatory. All right? Now, you use those words every day, don't you? My mind's gone blank. Adam, you use that word every day, don't you? What's promissory?
I'd say the root is promise.
You're making a promise. God, if you will give me food to eat and clothes to wear and be with me, then you shall be my God, and I will come here and I will erect an altar and I will worship you right here. I promise I will do something. However, oaths tend to be affirmatory. What's affirmatory, Nathan? It's basically saying, I affirm that what I am saying is the truth. That's affirm is the root of this. So, in other words, it's just basically saying I am promising that what I am, I guarantee that what I'm saying is the truth. Okay, and then finally, vows tend to look into the future, whereas oaths tend to look into the past. Okay, so when you think about Jacob's vow that he made, he's saying, God, if you will give me food to eat, clothes to wear, and be with me when I'm on my way, then you will be my God, and I will come to this place, and I will erect an altar, and I will worship you here. Whereas swearing to an oath is referring to something in the past. I affirm that Nathan did go through the red light when it was red, and he hit that other car, and it's his fault. You're talking about something, some action of the past. So those may not all, you may find some occasions where those don't always hold up, but generally speaking, that's the difference between vows and oaths. Okay, let's read that passage over there in Genesis chapter 28. This is Jacob making his vow. And as we read, think about this. He's making a vow. He's not swearing to an oath. He's making a vow. So this is private. It's voluntary. He didn't have to do it. He's doing it to God. It's positive. It's promissory. It's looking to the future. Genesis 28, verses 20 and 21. And Evan, I think maybe it's your turn to read.
And Jacob vowed a vow, saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in this way, that I go and will give and that I go and will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God.
Okay. So, and you can keep on reading and find out some more things that he also promised, but that's enough to illustrate what we've been saying. So, for all practical purposes, vowing and swearing stand or fall together. They're lumped together in Numbers chapter 30, and the same rules that regulate vows also regulate oaths. The same blessings, if you keep your vow, is the same blessing that you will receive if you keep your oath. And the same penalty befalls you if you break your vow. You get the same penalty as if you break your oath. And so, for all practical purposes, these stand or fall together. And if it is always wrong, always, under all circumstances, if it's wrong to swear, it looks like it ought to be wrong to vow always. But you know what? We would never think about a couple being married unless they said some vows. And so maybe we ought to think carefully about what is Jesus saying then when he said, swear not at all. We need to ask ourselves carefully what that might mean. All right. Now, there are various formulas used when swearing oaths. When an oath was taken, it was to be taken in the name of God only. And this is going to be a really important point, so you might write that down. When you take an oath, it must be in the name of God. All right. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 6. Justin, read this for me if you would. Deuteronomy 6 and verse 13.
You shall fear the Lord your God and serve him, and shall take oaths in his name.
Now, you think about it. This is a command. And you shall swear in God's name. That's going to be important. And later on, we're going to read about something for whatever is more than this, Jesus said, comes from the evil one. There is a kind of swearing that comes from the evil one. But the swearing that we're reading about here in Deuteronomy 6, verse 13, is coming from God. This is a command of God. And the command is, you swear and take oaths in my name, and you don't do it in any other way. By swearing in the name of God, there are several things being implied. Joseph, what's imply mean? If I say something explicitly, what's that? I'm saying word for word, plain English. But if I imply something, implication, what's that? Yeah, it's understood, but not directly expressed. So when a worshiper would swear in the name of God, he was implying several things. The first thing he's implying is that God exists. He's confessing he believes there is a God up there who will take vengeance on me if I don't tell the truth or don't keep my oath. Okay? He's not only acknowledging God's existence, he is acknowledging certain qualities about God. What's a quality about God, Adam, that someone would be confessing by implication?
I would think when somebody takes an oath, in that context, quality about God, I think two things stand out to me, that God is the creator. He has the authority of all. He is the creator.
Okay, that's one point I wanted to get, is he's omnipotent. And he can take vengeance on us if we don't keep our oath. So he is all powerful. What else? Anything else?
He's all knowing.
He knows if I'm telling the truth. And maybe there's another quality. Anybody? He's all seeing. And he watches me. And he can see if I'm carrying out my vow, if I make my vow. Well, because of these implications, to swear in the name of God, to acknowledge that He exists, that He is almighty, that He is all-seeing, He's all-knowing, He is in control. To swear was actually an act of worship. It was an act of worship. So what happens then if people swear by a false god? What are they doing, Josiah? Not bearing false witness. Nehemiah? That's right. They're saying, I believe that false god is real. I believe He's all-knowing. I believe He's in control. And so they're saying about this idol what ought to be said about God up in heaven. And so to swear by an idol is idolatry. Swear in the name of an idol. And the Scriptures warn against this practice in Jeremiah 5, verse 7. We won't turn there. I'll just give you that reference to write it down. To swear by a false god is idolatry, Jeremiah 5, verse 7. Now, not only did the Old Testament allow people to vow to vows and swear to oaths, but actually it required swearing on several different occasions. So let's talk about three of those different kinds of occasions where swearing was required. First of all, there is what's called the exculpatory oath. And I don't know if I can spell this without looking at my notes. Exculpatory. Exculpatory. Maybe there's an L right there. Exculpatory. Okay. Well, somebody tell me, what does that mean? That's a pretty common word we use. Anybody? Okay, exculpatory oath is an oath to clear yourself from guilt when there are no witnesses available. You're clearing yourself from guilt when there are no witnesses available. In Exodus chapter 22, we won't turn and read this. Let me just tell you, because it'll take too long to read all of these. In Exodus 22, verse 11, you're taking care of your neighbor's property, and the cow dies while your neighbor is gone, and you're taking care of his cow, and the cow dies, and you tell the neighbor when they get home, the cow died. And so you take an exculpatory oath, I promise I did not kill the cow, I did not eat the cow, I didn't sell the cow and profit from the cow. I promise you, the cow died, it was not my fault. And there were no witnesses, you see, and so he's taking the exculpatory oath to clear himself from guilt. And that was to be accepted and enough to settle the dispute. In Deuteronomy chapter 21, there is a body that is found out in the middle of nowhere, and they measure the distance between, and they, okay, this city, Bethlehem, is the closest city to this dead body. And the elders of Bethlehem come and they take an oath and they say, we promise we didn't do this and we don't know anything about it and we don't want his blood on our hands. So there were no witnesses, and the exculpatory oath cleared them from murder. Then in Numbers chapter 5, there was that woman who was suspected of adultery, and her husband brings her to the priest, and he takes a vial of what, Justin?
A vial of holy water.
Vial of holy water. Only time you'll ever read about that in the Bible. And he puts some dust off of the floor in the top of that. And then he scrapes off the curses that are written on the parchment. And he puts that shaved off ink in the, and he stirs it all up and she drinks it. And that was an oath to clear her, as she was basically saying, I promise I did not become unfaithful to my husband. And so that there were no witnesses, and so she's taking that. Now, in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, let's turn over and read that one. Ecclesiastes 9, and I think maybe Adam, it's your turn. Chapter 9 and verse 2.
All things come alike to all. One event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good, the clean, and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As is the good, so is the sinner. He who takes an oath as he who fears an oath.
Here we have a man who takes an oath and a man who fears the oath. Who is this fellow that fears the oath? Adam, take a guess.
I would think he who bears the oath is the one who's taken a false oath.
Yeah. In other words, he's guilty of a crime. He knows he's guilty, and he's afraid to take an oath and say, I didn't do this. Now, there's one man who takes the oath. He's innocent. He knows he's innocent. He's not afraid to put his hand on the Bible and raise his right hand and swear, I did not do this crime. But there is a man who fears the oath, and he's afraid to put his hand on the Bible and swear because he knows he's guilty and he doesn't want the penalty that's going to come by telling a false oath. So that's what that's talking about there. That's the exculpatory oath. The next kind of oath is called the adjuration. The adjuration. And this was a summons to appear and give testimony or information. And so a summons would be the whole tribe of Israel would be put under oath. And if you know anything about this crime, you must come forward and you must tell us what you know about what has happened. Let's look at this in Leviticus chapter 5. Jacob, we're back to you. Leviticus chapter 5, verse 1. This is where a modern translation is going to really help. The readers of the old King James are going to be handicapped on this one. So go ahead and read it.
If a person sins in the hearing of utterance of an oath, and is a witness whether he has seen or known of the matter, if he does not tell it, he bears guilt.
Okay, so if a person sins because he doesn't speak up when he hears the summons for the oath, so the whole camp is put under oath, and you must tell, if you know anything about this, you must come forward and tell. And if he doesn't, he will be in trouble. This is what got Achan's family in trouble when Achan stole that wedge of gold and that Babylonian garment over there in Joshua chapter 7. He stole that, and when it was time for Achan to be put to death, his wife and his children were all taken and put to death with him. Why? Because Joshua put the whole camp under oath. And if you know anything, if anybody knows any reason why we lost that fight against Ai, you must come forward. Well, nobody comes forward. So they have to go to a lot of trouble, and they go through every tribe, and then they finally find the right tribe, and they go through all of the families, and finally they find the one family, and they go through all the family members, and they get to Achan, finally. And then Achan, after he gets caught red-handed, he makes this wonderful confession, I have sinned against the Lord. Well, it's too late now. See, too late now. So he broke the oath. And if somebody withholds information and they want forgiveness for it later, if they haven't been destroyed, they can follow the prescription found in Leviticus 5, verses 5 through 13. And that tells you how to rectify and get forgiveness. All right? Then finally, number three, there is the voluntary oath. And the voluntary oath, a lot of people say, well, that's just a vow. And that's a fair observation. It's what it sounds like. It's voluntary. But once you do this, even though it's voluntary, you didn't have to take this oath. But once you do, you are obligated to keep it. And you should have thought about that before you made it. It's obligatory. Leviticus 5 and verse 4. Look at Psalm chapter 15. And Psalm 15 is kind of a short little chapter, so maybe we might read the whole thing here. I don't know. Let me see how many verses are there. Help if I'd get to Psalms instead of Job. Let's read the whole thing. Josiah.
Lord, who shall abide in thy tabernacle? Who shall dwell in thy holy hill? He that walketh uprightly and worketh righteousness and speaketh the truth in his heart. He that backbiteth not with his tongue, nor doeth evil to his neighbor, nor taketh up a reproach against his neighbor, in whose eyes a vile person is contemned?
I don't know.
Okay. But he honoreth them that fear the Lord. He that sweareth to his own hurt and changeth not. He that putteth not out his money to usury, nor taketh reward against the innocent. He that doeth these things shall never be moved.
Okay, you young guys need to get you a sermon up on Psalm 15. There's your sermon waiting to be preached. And this is off the track, but what did Brother Dwayne Permitter say about young men that are going to come and study with him?
He does not allow them to give topical studies. He will require that you put together an expository study if you're going to preach.
That's right. And there's you a sermon right there, right from the Scripture, a great sermon. But notice, who is going to abide in God's tabernacle? Who will dwell in his holy hill? In other words, who's going to go to heaven? Verse 4 says, he who swears to his own hurt and does not change. And so this is the idea of, I vowed that when I married Peggy, I vowed and I swore that I will be faithful to her always. And I will love and cherish her. And so then when she gets old and she's wrinkled and she has health problems and she needs someone to wait on her hand and foot, I can't start backing out of my vow and say, oh, you know, he who swears to his own hurt and changes not. You keep your vow even if it hurts. You keep it. That's who's going to heaven. Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Nathan, verses 2 through 5.
Do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, and you on earth. Therefore, let your words be few.
Okay, wait a minute. Don't be rash with your mouth. You be careful about just popping out with a vow. You be careful about just saying an oath. Let your words be few. Do not utter anything hastily before God, calling upon God as a witness, you see. Don't do it hastily. God is in heaven, you on earth. He's greater than you. He can take vengeance on you. Look at verse 2. Therefore, let your words be few. Don't go around just vowing every day about something or swearing every day about something. Let your words be few. Go ahead.
For a dream comes through much activity, and a fool's voice is known by his many words.
You see a man who's swearing to everything every day, you're looking at a fool. And I'm not saying that in a hateful way like Jesus talked about earlier, don't call someone a fool. I'm talking about what the Bible says is a fool. Okay, go ahead. Verse 4.
When you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. Better not to vow than to vow and not pay.
Look at that, verse 5. Better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Now you need to highlight those verses 2 through 5. You need to highlight those in your Bible. That's an important passage right there. Very practical. So let's summarize what we have learned now from the Old Testament. We are told in the Old Testament, don't make very many vows. Just don't do it. Don't do it. And sometimes they are commanded, and when they are commanded, or when you do take the vow, you keep it. You do what you said you would do. And there was serious punishment promised to anybody who will not keep their vow or their oath. And so that's what Jesus was talking about when he said in Matthew 5 and verse 33, you've heard that it was said, you shall not forswear thyself, or you shall not break your oaths, but you shall perform them. And that was an awful effort to try to quote that. So read it again. Nehemiah. Read Matthew 5 and verse 33 again.
Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform your oaths to the Lord.
Okay, that is an accurate rendition of what the Old Testament truly taught. The Old Testament truly taught that. The Pharisees did not louse this up, and Jesus is now having to correct some loused up teaching here. But now he's going to go on in verse 34, and he says, but I say to you, swear not at all. Swear not at all. Now, here is a problem now that we come into. Jesus said, swear not at all. And that's the title that we've given this here. So we've got it written up there. Jesus said, swear not at all. And yet, I open up my New Testament, and I see people swearing with God's approval, even though Jesus said, swear not at all. And so I'm scratching my head and I'm wondering, how's this possible? But first of all, let me show you that there were people who swore with God's approval in the New Testament scriptures. First of all, Jesus did this. Jesus did it. Look at Matthew chapter 26. And Joseph, read me 63 and 64.
But Jesus kept silent, and the high priest answered and said unto them, I put you under oath by the living God. Tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said unto him, it is as you said.
Okay, stop. Look at verse 63. The high priest answered and said to him, I put you under oath by the living God. What's the old King James say there, Josiah?
Verse 63?
Yeah.
But Jesus held his peace, and the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God.
I what?
I adjure thee.
I adjure you. There's the adjuration, you see. The adjuration. He's putting him under oath. Okay? So, I'm putting you under oath. Now, until this point, Jesus just stood there silent and said not a word during his trial. He said nothing. The only time he spoke is when he was put under the oath. And when he was put under the oath, then he said, it is as you have said. It is. He is, and what he's saying is, yes, I am the Christ, the Son of God. And until he was put under oath, he didn't say anything. So Jesus took an oath, the adjuration, and he didn't tell the high priest, oh, don't talk like that. You shouldn't be talking like that. You don't put people under an oath to God. No, he answered the oath. And that, to me, that seems somewhat strange that Jesus would do that when he said, swear not at all. Because usually Jesus practiced what he preached. And here he is, it seems like he is swearing after he told us, don't swear at all. All right. The next example, the Apostle Paul. He swore in the name of God. Let's look at Romans chapter 1, verse 9. Evan, Romans 1, verse 9.
My witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention for you always in my prayers.
Notice, God is my witness. Do you remember what the definition of swearing is? The definition, I'm going to read it to you again from American Heritage Dictionary. To swear is to make a solemn declaration or promise, to assert under oath, to affirm earnestly with great conviction. An oath is a formal promise to fulfill a pledge, often calling upon God as a witness. And so what it looks like here is it looks like when he says, God is my witness that whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers. What he's saying is, I'm calling upon God and I'm promising in the name of God, I pray for you every day. That's what he's saying. Look at 2 Corinthians chapter 1. And verse 18, Cody, I'm going to have you read another one also while we're there. Oh, wait a minute. Did I skip Evan? Oh, I'm sorry. Verse 18.
As God is true, our word toward you was not yea and nay.
As God is true, he's calling upon God as witness to verify that what he is saying is right. God is faithful. Our word to you was not yes and no at the same time. And God is my witness. Okay, read verse 23, same chapter.
Moreover, I call God for a record upon my soul that to spare you I came not as yet unto Corinth.
Okay, read that out of the New King James, Nathan. Or who's got a New King James? Jacob, read it. 23.
Moreover, I call God as witness against my soul that to spare you, I came no more to Corinth.
Okay. I call God as a witness against my soul. Now, I'm telling you, he's swearing right there. He's calling on God as a witness. So, you know, if we use that language like that in a court of law, the court's going to say, okay, He's swearing to tell the truth. That's the kind of language they're looking for. Look at Galatians chapter 1, verse 20. Get Justin the microphone. Justin's over here. Hello, Justin. Galatians 1 and verse 20.
Now concerning the things which I write to you, indeed, before God, I do not lie.
Look at that. Before God, I am not lying. He's swearing to an oath. Okay? And you know what's very interesting is you go to some of these commentaries, and I think McGarvey's one of them. they're saying, now, this looks like an oath and it sounds like an oath, but it's not an oath. Well, I've always felt like if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And this looks like an oath, sounds like an oath, operates like an oath, it's an oath. That's what it is. In Philippians chapter 1 and verse 8, Adam, Philippians 1 verse 8. Paul wants these Philippians to know he is truly concerned about them. He really is. And so he calls God as his witness. God is my witness. How greatly I long for you. That's an oath that he's taking to help brethren to understand how serious he is about what he's writing. And this is my last example of the Apostle Paul swearing in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2. Okay, Jacob, read this for me. 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 5.
For neither at any time did we use flattering words, as you know, nor a cloak of covetousness. God is witness.
God is a witness. We did not use flattering words. Also, read me verse 10 there, Jacob.
You are witnesses, and God also, how devoutly and justly and blamelessly we behaved ourselves among you who believe.
Okay, so that may also there be an oath, but verse 5 clearly is. Okay, now, let's just take a little 5-minute break here. It's been a while. And we'll come back. My red light is blinking. Does that mean?